Well, Mark's gospel begins in the way no other gospel does. He begins with a bang. His opening is short and sweet. There's no birth narrative, as in Matthew and Luke. There's no beautiful hymn to the eternal word, as there is in John. We plunge right into the life of Jesus with his baptism. For Mark, that's where it starts. And you notice in Mark's gospel, his language is very economical. He doesn't say a whole lot about that. Jesus comes. He's baptized. He sees the Spirit descending on him like a dove. He hears a voice saying, "You are my beloved, in whom I am well pleased." And then, boom. It's almost as if Jesus was the person that God saw and said, "Okay, this is the one I'm going to pick out." And this is where God picked Jesus out, to proclaim that God's love was not just for him, though he heard that voice saying that he was beloved, but for everyone. I believe that whenever we baptize a child, God says, "You are my beloved, in whom I am well pleased." Because you see, we as United Methodists believe that God's love is there even before we know it. You don't have to say, "I want to be a follower of Jesus," and then God says, "Well, okay, you've met the requirements, I'll love you." No. God loves you in the first place, or else you could not even make the commitment to be a follower of Jesus. We depend on God's love to do everything we do. And there is nothing we can do to stop God from loving us. Absolutely nothing. We can neglect that love. We can ignore that love. We can reject that love. But there is not a thing we can do that will stop God from surrounding us with the kind of love that we need, even if we don't know it. Just recently, I received a gift, a book from my dear friend, Nancy Hawthorne, by a woman named Marilyn Robinson. She knows we both like this author. This is the third in a series. The first book is called Gilead. The second is called Home. The third is called Lila. Now, one reason I like this book is that one of the main characters is an old preacher. I can identify. Lila is one of those persons who has never really experienced being beloved. She has not been told that she was loved, and her experiences have not led her to believe that. But she comes to the little town of Gilead trying to find a place, and she's afraid to find a place. She keeps fantasizing about leaving. But in the process of her finding that place, she agrees to be baptized. And then she has second thoughts. She starts thinking, I'm not good enough to be baptized. I don't deserve this love that God has given me, and I might just run away sometime. So she takes it upon herself to try to unbaptize herself, to go into the river and wash her baptism away. A little later in the book, she's talking with the preacher, John Ames. They're talking about prayer. And he says that even a single word can be a prayer. He says family is a prayer. Wife is a prayer. Marriage is a prayer. Lila says, baptism is a prayer. No, he said, baptism is what I would call a fact. He laughed. She said, because you can't just wash it off. He laughed. Nope, not with all the water in the West Nishnabotna. You can't wash it off. Once you have the watermark of God's love on you, there's nothing you can do to get rid of it. Again, you can deny it. You can try to pretend that it's not there. But it will still be there. You are still the beloved. And the second stage and the appropriate response to that is to go forth and let other people know that they too are beloved of God. And we do that both in our words and in the way we treat them as individuals and as a congregation. Now, Over the next couple of weeks and today, we're going to be talking about group life in the church and inviting you, if you haven't already become involved, to be involved in group life in the church. Next week, we will be dealing with Bible studies, and some of you are already involved in Bible studies of various kinds. Week after that, we'll be dealing with Sunday morning classes. Some of you are longtime members of Sunday school classes. Others, maybe never. Today, we're dealing with covenant discipleship groups. And in covenant discipleship groups, people come together in order to remind themselves that they are beloved of God and to hold each other accountable for doing those things that show other people that they too are beloved of God. They're held accountable to devotional time, personal time, as well as corporate worship. They're held accountable to acts of compassion as well as acts of justice. Acts of compassion and acts of justice are the way we communicate God's love to others, right? Even when we respond in the baptismal response that all of you just said, we give thanks for all that God has already given you. We acknowledge that God has already given us, even as an infant, everything we need, which is God's love. That's our message. That's what we preach. That's what we take out, and that's what we're held accountable to in covenant discipleship groups. Now, we're fortunate in this congregation because we have two people who have been central to the birth of covenant discipleship groups. David Lowes Watson, who was an interim pastor here for several years. I first met David in 1984 when we both arrived at the Board of Discipleship, at the General Board of Discipleship. All I knew about him was that he had found a way of taking John Wesley's group life and structure in the 18th century and putting it into the modern church in a way that we too could participate and live it out. And so he gave many years to that task. Steve Mansgar, who took up that mantle after he retired, after David retired, has continued that, and both are part of this congregation. Over the past couple of years, we have developed a number of covenant discipleship groups. If you were here last year, you heard Tom Lee offer a profound witness to how his group had shaped his faith and touched his life. You're going to get to hear another witness in just a few minutes. Aaron Medine Lusky is going to talk to you a little bit about how her participation in a covenant discipleship group. That was easy for me to say, wasn't it? In a covenant discipleship group transformed her life as well. But before we go to the creed and before Aaron speaks, I just want you to remember two things. If you don't remember anything else about this sermon, these two things. We were loved before we knew it. We were loved before we ever could even begin to recognize that love. And God empowers us to share that love with others through compassion, through justice, through the way we deal, not simply with individuals, but the structures of the world that keep people oppressed. That's our calling. That's our message. You are God's beloved child, in whom God is well pleased. It's at the heart of all that we are as followers of Jesus. Thanks be to God.